Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back here, 8 o'clock, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Mike Tannenbaum rejoining the show, former NFL GM. He's an NFL insider for ESPN, 3013 as well, doing a great job. It's his time of the year. It's football time. Mike, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Great to be with you.
Yeah. So Washington, Cam Newton sitting there. I saw you said you. I heard you say that you think that'd be a nice fit there.
Absolutely. I don't know why Washington would not sign him. When you think about, guys, it's 16 more games to go this year, and he has a relationship with Ron Rivera, so there's obviously some familiarity there. Knowing that it's not going to be exactly the same. If I was Washington, I would sign him, knowing that we're going to have a real chance to have a good team this year. So I don't really see the downside in signing him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they decide to handle that, because early in the year, I mean, Washington's very much in the mix when you look at that division. But is it a team that you think based on what you saw from the Dallas Cowboys in their first matchup, is Washington a team that no matter even if they have Cam, they have enough offense to hang with a team like Dallas long-term?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'd say that overall, I thought offensively they were going to move the ball better against the Chargers. And look, it's only one game. I do believe in Taylor Heinicke. You know, when you go back last year, guys, he really played well against the Buccaneer defense in the playoffs. So, they're going to have to play more consistently because they're, you know, Dallas is going to be able to score a ton of points. We saw that already. But the other thing about Washington, guys, they may have the best front seven in all of football.
I'm hearing so much stuff and a lot of criticism this week about Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers. Are we already, after week one, in relax, R-E-L-A-X mode?
Well, I don't think we could overreact in one game. With that said, I was shocked how he played. You know, one of the things, guys, we got to remember is, you know, he is human. And what he went through, just think about it, every conversation he's having with a friend, a relative, is about what's going on, what's your future, you know, are they treating you fairly? That's got to impact you, even for an all-time great. And the best players I've been around in my career, guys, really do have the fundamental ability to block things out. So I do think there should be some concern, but I don't think we should overreact because, again, it's just one game.
Yeah, that's kind of how I look at it. And speaking of overreaction inside that same game, you know, we know Cam Newton threw for – I'm not Cam Newton, but I was going to get to Cam in a second. Jameis threw for 148 yards but 5 touchdowns. You remember last year, the first 2 to 3 weeks, really first 2 weeks, Cam Newton got off to a good start and the overreaction was, holy wow, what a steal the Patriots got. And at the end of it, it was not a steal. Do you think this is a little bit of an overreaction by people with Jameis? Or, and I think more than likely, is it Sean Payton is just a really, really good fit for Jameis, and maybe Jameis is growing up as a quarterback?
I thought he was going to be the comeback player of the year. I thought the game slowed down for him a little bit. I think he saw the value of a check down. And he humbled himself, guys. 70 starts, 27 years old, to sit behind Drew Brees a year ago. I think that says a lot about him. It was one game, and I know we shouldn't overreact, but I think if he could just minimize those 2 to 3 bad plays a game, I really think the Saints would be very happy with Jameis Winston. And I think if we were having a conversation amongst the three of us in about 6 weeks, we're going to be talking about, hey, how come he hasn't signed an extension yet?
Yeah, Mike Tannenbaum with us, former GM, NFL insider for ESPN, 33rd team as well. Were you a little surprised with the Texans and what they did? And do you think it's a big spread against the Browns this week, Mike? Do you think they can play with them at all?
Yeah, you know, a couple of things. let's give them a lot of credit. You know, so much was made about the Deshaun Watson situation on the offseason, but what we saw was Tyrod Taylor can make some plays, buy some time with his feet. They got a couple of really good running backs. When you do that, you know, I had the great fortune of working for Coach Belichick twice in my career, and one of the things he always talked about, and, you know, Nick Caserio obviously comes from that same tree, is oftentimes in football, guys, the games are lost before they're ever won. And if you go into the game knowing that you're going to run the ball and you have a smart quarterback who maybe doesn't have the upside some of these other guys that, you know, we've talked about have, you know, the Aaron Rodgers or certainly the ability of someone like Jameis Winston, but Houston can make themselves hard to beat by just doing what they did last week. And they took advantage of a rookie quarterback. I was a little disappointed at Trevor Lawrence. I thought he misread a coverage a couple times. One led to an interception. And, you know, from a hopeful, from a Jacksonville standpoint, he'll learn from experience. As it relates to Houston and Cleveland, look, I think they know how they're going to have to play. I don't think they could sit there and go toe-to-toe with that explosive Brown offense. But I think if they can control the line of scrimmage and keep it, really try to take the air out of the football and try to run the ball, I think that would give them the best chance to win.
Mike Tannenbaum is with us right now, former general manager of the Jets, and a guy who's been with Dolphins, Jets. You've been around, and you've seen a lot of different teams in their composition. Based on what you saw from Tampa Bay, you know, we know it's the same team primarily from last year. I would be a little bit more, and I thought Tony Dungy said something interesting. Tony Dungy said he spent all summer in Tampa, and one of the big concerns that Bruce Arians had was the, I think it felt like an urgency level from the team. Do you think that there is going to be an issue with keeping everybody up for Tampa in a season after they won the Super Bowl, and they are a little bit older team right now?
Ordinarily, I would say yes, because it's Tom Brady. I would say no. I think that's one of his many superpowers. Ordinarily, absolutely. There would be a big concern because it's human nature, and everyone tell you how great you are. You know, Tom Brady has a lot of superpowers. One of them is this, you know, burning desire to be the best every single day. And when you talk to people in that building, you know, they tell you that he's a guy that brings energy to every meeting, every walkthrough. So, ordinarily I say yes, but just because of him, I would say no.
Should we now play the Steelers early in this? I mean, that was kind of unbelievable, right? I mean, the Bills have got so much. Preseason hype, and Steelers go in there and handle business, but that's what the Steelers do early in the season, no?
Yeah, and you know what's interesting to me is it was really because of special teams and defense. You know, Najee Harris played every snap, and you know, we're not talking about Najee Harris. You know, I still have a lot of concerns about Ben Roethlisberger, just given his age, lack of mobility, and that offensive line. But what I would say is, if they can be that dominant in special teams and, you know, keep playing the way they are defensively, because, again, they went against a really, really good offense, they're going to be a tough out.
If there's one game that resonated with me, Mike, it was what Arizona did to Tennessee in Tennessee. And, I mean, not just – of course I expected them to have a potentially a big game throwing the football against Tennessee secondary. But what they did to Derrick Henry and what they were able to do defensively – how big a surprise was that, what Arizona did on the road to handle Tennessee that easily?
Yeah, that's why you and I are so aligned. I was shocked how well their defense played. You know, of course, we could sit here and talk about the greatness of Chandler Jones and what he did to Tyler Lewan, but I think when you look at that Arizona defense, guys like Isaiah Simmons, Buda Baker, they have playmakers up and down that defense beyond J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones. They drafted Zaven Collins in the first round. So I think there's going to be a lot said about, you know, this explosive Cardinal offense, but I don't think enough's been said about their defense.
Following that up, I asked my dad about this. We were talking about Taylor Lewan getting beat, the tackle from the Titans getting beat by Chandler Jones, and he said when he was there with Arizona with Chandler, Chandler spent so much time working with John Bones Jones, his brother, a UFC fighter. He said his hands are so good. He doesn't have electric moves, but his hands are so good that he gets into a winning position very, very quickly if you're not on top of your game as a tackle. But I thought what was a potentially interesting strategic consideration was J.J. Watt came from the AFC South. He knows the blockers on Tennessee, at least some of them, and he also understands the running scheme, seeing Derrick Henry twice a year. And I was very curious if JJ might have had some type of impact in that meeting room with Vance Joseph as the defensive coordinator, if a player could have that kind of impact. Did you ever find that when you were a GM and on the personnel side, that players could have an impact with a coaching staff after they come from a former team?
No question about it. It's a great point. And like you said, when you're in the division like that, there's such familiarity. It certainly can help, and you know someone's vulnerability. And, you know, as you know, there's that game within a game and techniques and, you know, things like hard counts and the way people are leaning, one pass tells. To have any sort of information on your opponent can always be helpful.
Mike Tannenbaum here with us on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Cowboys go to the Chargers. They bolstered the defense this offseason, Mike, but did they?
Yeah, that's a good question. We're going to find out. I thought the Cowboys looked better, but they're still young. They have a long way to go. I believe in Dan Quinn, and I think they have a lot of young players on defense that I think will continue to get better.
Yeah. You like, I mean, hey, Washington did a nice job against the Chargers. Do you like the Chargers scoring a lot of points this week against this Cowboy defense?
Yeah, I do like the Chargers on offense, and I think Justin Herbert is going to be the next superstar in the NFL because of his character, his ability, his work ethic. You know, coming out, he was my number one quarterback 2 years ago. He reminds me of a young Roethlisberger. He can make plays with his feet, and he's hard to tackle. He can extend the down. And they have Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. So I think the Charger offense is going to be really good.
I tell you what. When he came, I remember when he was a sophomore, I wrote him up as the number one player, number one quarterback when he was a sophomore. And then I didn't see a lot of improvement after that. But then when I watched tape on him, the interesting comparison against Tua is when you finish watching tape on Justin Herbert, you go, man, you just wish that he did this and this. But there were flashes where you go, holy crap. When you watch Tua, there was no holy crap moments. It was just, wow, look at these guys around him who are catching the ball and running 70 yards. Or look at this RPO. I never had the, oh, wow, moments with Tua. And yet, you know, he was a little more consistent. But that's why they say, Mike, grade the flashes. Because a lot of times those flashes, when they hit big.
Yeah, that's the old, like, you know, floor and ceiling debate. You know, in scouting we say, you know, what's their floor, what's their ceiling? And I just felt like Justin Herbert's ceiling. You know, Jerry Angelo, a longtime NFL GM, you know, he's talked about, you know, the team sets the floor and the character sets the ceiling, meaning the talent is the baseline. And then, you know, your character will give you how high you can maximize your abilities. And when you look at someone like Herbert, you know, to me, he was a high floor, high ceiling guy. I thought, to me, Tua was a high floor guy. His ceiling wasn't as high because I just felt like he was short and slow, and thought he could still have a very good career. Just didn't see him having like the same sort of measurables that someone like Herbert has. So that's where the difference to me was between the two. And if you take it a step further, you know, if Herbert had played in the SEC, what would that have looked like?
Yeah, right. Short. He's short, but he's slow.
And I thought that he, you know, the knock on him was that he was, and I fell into this because I heard it from NFL teams. He grew up in Oregon. He grew up in Eugene. He played in Eugene. He didn't go to any of the openings or the, you know, any of those quarterback battles and camps and 7-on-7s. And he's just not built for an NFL locker room. And Mina Kimes had a really good article on ESPN about how he leads as more of a, he's a quiet leader, Mike. The demeanor, is that pretty rare for a quarterback to be kind of a passive leader as quarterback and who doesn't have that demonstrative personality?
Yeah, I think I learned that early in my career, guys. I was around the great Curtis Martin, and what lesson there is leadership comes in a lot of different shapes and sizes, and you don't have to give a team speech to be a great leader. And, you know, Justin Herbert is a lead by example, keeps the standards high. But you don't have to be a rah-rah guy to be an effective leader.
Yeah. Mike Tannenbaum, ESPN, 33rd team. You got to get the emails from 33rd team. Great stuff. Great information. Always detailed and good stuff behind the scenes of what's going on in the NFL. Mike, we really appreciate you being here. Thanks again. And hopefully we'll be able to talk to you again soon.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
All right, Mike Tannenbaum here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. What about, would you like to have a nice grill with Mike?
I had the grill. Sure. If he wants to come over, I'll grill it up for him. We had the Wagyu burgers. My man, that's right, Michael at Pete's Fine Meats. We did Wagyu burgers for Mason's birthday. Mason wanted to have some burgers, so Drake and Macy came over. I had boyfriends and girlfriends and whatever. Well, it's just girlfriends. And the whole family was there, and we had a great time on the Memphis Grill, which is what I use. The pits and spit, but I'm telling you right now, the grills that they have available at Texas Star Grill Shop, these are high-end, high-performing grills. They're grills that when you make the investment in them, they're going to give back to you in spades because they are long-term. They're built to last. They're built exceptionally well, and they're very, very durable, all of them that they have there. And their performance level is off the charts. And I can tell you that when you're looking for whether it's wood pellets or a wood pellet grill or maybe it's wood chips or maybe you're looking for charcoal, they've got it. For rubs, for marinades, they've got it. Every accessory imaginable, they've got it. Most importantly, the top grills on the market. And they'll help you pick which one is right for you based on your budget and how you like to grill. TexasStarGrillShop.com, 4 locations. They'll also handle the assembly and delivery absolutely free. This is your one-stop shop for your barbecue needs, TexasStarGrillShop.com.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5. You are listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. The Wheelhouse had Charles Amenihue on yesterday. And obviously he talked about the Texans. That was a nice win, really nice win. And Charles Amenihue wants to be a team leader. He wants to take over that JJ role, I think. He wants to be a leader on defense, and that's all fine and good. He did go to the University of Texas.
Yep.
And the University of Texas had some issues on Saturday. And he had some thoughts on that game and on Sark.
You know, it wasn't good. You know, it wasn't good at all. With the team moving to the SEC in a couple of years, that's not a good first start, you know, going against an SEC team. But I completely believe in Coach Sark and that whole staff. They've done it at the highest level as far as in the league, some of those guys, and also in college football, being at Alabama before, they know what it looks like to do it right. So I think, you know, that they're going to go back to the drawing board and not just scratch it up, but refine and resharpen their tool and knives to get ready for Rice and to put a performance that, you know, the team and alumni is going to be proud of.
Well, they're 25-point favorites. They should be a 2-point favorite over Rice, but they're 25-point favorites. Well, they both played Arkansas.
Right, right. No, I get it. Within 2 points of each other. The transitive properties, right? I get it.
Right,
I get
right.
It.
So, but, yeah, they get Rice this week, and, you know, that's going to be a tough go for Rice. They're going to take it out on Rice. They're going to start Casey Thompson this week instead of – he pulled the plug on – but Hudson Card really, really struggled. He got happy feet back there. He made poor decisions. He made quick decisions that and he didn't believe in his offensive line, and he just didn't play well. But now it's Casey Thompson's time. It'll be interesting to see how he works this thing. We're 2 games in, and we've seen, you know, Hudson Card wins the job. Hudson Card's out for game 3.
Mm-hmm.
That's never a good thing.
No,
that's never a good thing. But you know, it was a close battle as opposed to the Zach Calzada versus. Haynes King a deal.
It is interesting because Hudson Card, you can see the talent, but that just wasn't good enough the other day. And I wonder how many mental mistakes he made because Thompson, when he's been in the games, he looked comfortable. I saw him in the first game last year against a bad, was it UTSA or whoever they played last year. They smoked him in week 1 and Thompson came in. I'm like, oh, this guy's got a little something to him. And then, of course, we know at the end of the year he was in and had a big performance in the bowl game. every time he comes in, he just makes plays. He makes plays. So I think right now you just say, well, he's been making plays whenever he gets his time. He's had limited amount of time. Why not go with them? Why not go with them? And Hudson Card may be their long-term guy, maybe not. I think he probably is, but that should be an open competition. Sark just got in. This is not, you know, that should be, it should be open. Steve Sarkisian should say, this is why I kind of like it. What he's telling everyone there is, okay, your job, hey, I don't care that this is Texas. Nobody has, we're not good enough right now. So nobody is going to have a job just given to him. Nobody. You got to earn it, and you got to earn it every week. And right now, Hudson Card hasn't earned it, and Thompson has earned it, and so we'll go with Thompson.
Right. If a linebacker plays poorly, a linebacker's, you absolutely know what? He's going to get pulled, and you know what? And then it's no big deal. But when a quarterback gets pulled, it's a huge deal that, you know, now all of a sudden you don't have confidence in it, or you may be doubting your own. Listen, they're playing Rice this week. They ain't playing Arkansas again. So this will work out fine. It'll be interesting to see. I know everybody is high on Sark. I can see in 2 years this is going to be the same Tom Herman situation.
You think so?
Yeah.
I thought about it. And Sark, you know, everybody looked great in New England whenever they worked with Tom Brady. Everyone, we got to see Lane Kiffin had success as a play caller. Sark had success. Bill O'Brien's going to have success. The question I have with Sark is going to be, I mean, some of it's going to come down to play calling and that, but they clearly, like, the players aren't good enough for some reason. The players just, the talent isn't, I don't know if it's the talent or if it's development. I don't know what the problem is at Texas.
No, it's a shame. But speaking of which, Bill O'Brien, Dan Wetzel and Pete Thamel made the argument on Yahoo Sports that Bill O'Brien is the next USC head coach.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah.
I mean, good, sweet. I think that'll go just terribly.
A dynamic play caller. Now, Bill O'Brien is not bad.
No.
Bill O'Brien got in over his head because he took on too many jobs
here. Right.
Bill O'Brien, the GM, was horrific. Bill O'Brien, the head coach, wasn't bad. Bill O'Brien, the coach at Penn State, was pretty good. He was pretty good. Bill O'Brien, the play caller at Duke, wasn't great. He wasn't great. And what was his other stop? Georgia Tech, or was it Georgia Tech?
Georgia Tech, Duke, Georgia Tech, yeah. New England.
They not great.
Penn State.
Not great.
Right.
But, you know, he's going to have a lot more talent at USC than he had at Duke or Georgia Tech. When he had some talent at Penn State, he was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? He did a nice job. Bill O'Brien getting that job at USC, it's going to be interesting to see if you bring that mass hole to Southern California and how that's going to work out. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's
USC didn't like Coach O because he was such a down-home guy. You really going to take bar fighting, FU, Bill O'Brien, like, Northeast guy?
Yeah.
You think he's going to fit in with that country? Well,
Orgeron's a little different in that you couldn't understand him there. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they knew Ed Orgeron. Me and Eric Layden were talking about this. You know, Eric is a huge USC fan, an actor, a friend of the show. And we were talking about it yesterday. He said, we were talking about how they could add Orgeron. They went with Clay Helton. He goes, yeah, but the problem is that position does take some schmoozing. Mm-hmm. Like, you do have to, yes, you have to be able to recruit. And Ed Orgeron's a great recruiter. But there's other stuff you have to do inside the program. And that's the part. Bill O'Brien didn't like that at Penn State. He didn't like it here. I don't think Bill O'Brien, the football coach, is going to like having to do the CEO stuff at USC if he ends up going there. But to bring it back to Texas for a second, and Steve Sarkisian, man, that's awfully, it's a little early to give up on Sarkisian.
No, I mean, I'm not. I just taken over.
But
I never believed that Steve Sarkisian was going to be a great Texas head coach. Period.
But no, he may not be. But yeah. I want to see what happens.
I'm not worried. It's not just based
when
on
he
that.
Gets his guys in and he gets his system fully implemented. I want to see what it looks like. I want to see what it looks like with Casey Thompson. I think they ran into a team that's more disciplined, is frankly better right now, better coached with the talent they have in Sam Pittman's Arkansas squad. That's just what it is. I mean, their defense, the Texas defense, looked really bad the other day. They looked really disorganized and disheveled. And we'll see if they can get that thing fixed by next year. I don't think it's getting fixed this year. I think they're just they're going to have to get better linebacker play and better defensive line play. You know what my dad told me? So he watched that game, and I said, hey, what about the fact that Steve Sarkisian maybe just, he goes, I said, you know, maybe he went in with this one game plan, and me and John talked about how, you know, maybe he just said, all right, we're going to try to run the football. He goes, here's the thing, Lance. He said, the way that they were playing them, they played a four eye, meaning a four inside, the four technique. You're playing inside eye of the tackle. So he, where they played them, he said, it makes it really hard to get backside cutoff blocks. He said, so what happened was they kind of ruined the backside cutoff to where they weren't able to get backside runs on their zone plays running wise. And then you could tell that they had game planned for a certain way. And he said, it's hard to change your game plan. People talk about making adjustments at halftime. He goes, a lot of that's crap. You can't change the way that you have game planned against a certain front and against, he said, you know, you can change some of the play calling you do, but you can't just change up schematically, make wholesale changes in the middle of halftime. He goes, it doesn't work that way, not after you've done an install. And he said, I think Steve Sarkisian looked like he was very, like he was just kind of lost at times as a play caller with what to do, because Arkansas clearly, he said, they were walking safeties in late into the box. He said, but he thought as a watching the game as an O-line coach that Sarkisian just never had an answer. The reason he stuck with the plays he was calling, because he didn't have an answer for what Arkansas was showing him. He did not, maybe from a preparation standpoint, they weren't ready to face a certain look that they got. And he said that was just, he had that happen against Jimmy Johnson. Remember the D coordinator with the Eagles? Jimmy Johnson showed a wild blitz look that no one had ever seen, and Ben Roethlisberger couldn't figure it out. He just couldn't. And he got sacked like 8 times in the game. And he said it was a helpless feeling, because by the time we figured out what exactly they were doing, it was so fundamentally unsound. They were leaving a guy wide open. They were basically leaving a guy wide open and gambling that Ben wouldn't see it because he was confused by a safety look. And he said by the time we got it figured out, it was too late. Now, the rest of the year, they were ready for it, and they had changed schematically. He said, but when you're in the middle of a game and somebody's doing something scheme-wise to you, he said, it's almost impossible to change up on it, because you got to change on every single player has to make a change. He said, it's just not enough time.
Yeah. Well, I got some examples of that one. When I played.
It's true, isn't it?
And we couldn't do anything
if
about
it. If you get a bare front look against a zone blocking team, like the Giants would do it against Gary Kubiak's team. I remember my dad walked me through this tape one time, and he said, everybody's going to be covered up. Or he said, guard, center, guards covered up. They can't climb up to the second level and get linebackers. He said, this kills Gary Kubiak every time. The Giants would do it, and Gary was lost. And I said, well, what do you do against it? He goes, you run gap plays. There's a different – Houston eventually got to a different play. But that's when you have a stubborn play caller like Gary Kubiak who thinks, well, this is the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
And you just have to execute.
Anyway, we'll talk about it during the break. But you got to talk about All-State siding. JerMichael Finley had some words for Aaron Rodgers.
Was he good? Was he kind? Was he nice?
No, he was wonderful. He was wonderful to Aaron. And we'll hear that on the other side right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Right now, I want to tell you about All-State siding and windows. And boy, for some of you out there, you need, depending on where you're listening from, you know, you thought about, wow, I really wish that I had different windows for this, for the winds that we had. Maybe it became an issue for you. Maybe you found a little bit of water inside your home because the wind was pushing the water through a leaky window. And you can get your windows retrofit with Allstate siding and windows. They got 25% off their window installations, or you can buy 10 windows and get 2 windows free. Never have we seen offers with these kind of windows at these prices, but they've got them for you. Double pane, double strength windows. It helps to lock out the noise. It's retrofit to keep out the dust and the rain and the elements and keep your air conditioning and heating inside your home. And of course, siding, they'll give you $2,000 off of complete siding jobs, so you can really upgrade the looks of your house with the siding and with the windows. Family run company for over 50 years. I highly recommend my friends from AllstateSidingAndWindows.com. Give them a call today, 832-204-1936. Take advantage of these specials. That's AllstateSidingAndWindows.com.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. The godfather of Houston sports radio, the preeminent NFL draft analyst, you found the bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, 8:35 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. RJ Bell going to be joining us in an hour. He'll be on in an hour. He and Lance going to be breaking down some stuff. I'll just sit here for most of that. Just RJ. I don't think RJ knows who I am. He doesn't know my name or whatever, but that's fine.
He was on the show I produced for 3 years and then said, oh, well, your producer must really be a fan of mine. Like, okay.
You're a fanboy?
I've known it. I've worked with RJ for several years.
And you're a fanboy?
Yeah, okay. Clearly.
All right. So he and Lance will talk about games. I'll sit here.
You don't have any betting questions?
I'll be Fred.
Stop.
I'll be Fred for that. That 15 minutes. So that'll happen in an hour right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So, if you can't tell me that the offseason didn't affect Aaron Rodgers, you can't tell me that the Packer team was ready when we saw what happened on Sunday. I thought that they were
one going game through. In, your narrative is right. We'll see.
Yes.
If it lasts, yes.
Well,
then it did. And Mike Tannenbaum referenced it. All this negativity. And then you're just going to flip the switch. And San Francisco, hey, New Orleans is not a bad. It's not like New Orleans was some crappy defense with no talent on it.
Yeah.
I mean, New Orleans had players, although I was thinking, okay, they just traded for Bradley Roby because their secondary is a mess. So I thought that they'd be able to attack New Orleans secondary, but that, you know, their cornerbacks, but that just didn't, obviously that didn't happen.
Yeah. Jermichael Finley had a couple of things to say. First of all, Aaron Rodgers is to blame.
He's a quarterback that doesn't never take blame for himself. He's that guy, if I throw the ball to the receiver, he's got to catch it wherever it's at. He's not a guy, if you go into the film room and he made a bad pass, he's not that guy that's going to raise his hand and say, oh, that's my bad. He's going to make sure the coaches know that that's all on you. I got the ball there. You got to catch the ball.
So, Aaron.
That's not leadership, by the way. What Jermichael
said.
Well,
that's a guy that's led him to the last two NFC championship games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he won the MVP last year.
He's a great player.
Yeah. That's not great leadership. Jermichael Finley was in that locker room with him and knows Aaron Rodgers. That's a shame if Aaron Rodgers is like that, that even if he makes a bad pass, it's somebody else to blame. I could see it, I guess.
It's not impossible to believe.
No. And then he talks about Aaron Rodgers' work ethic.
This is the National Football League. Each offseason, you got to work like it's the last season. And I just don't see a work ethic in Aaron Rodgers that I have in previous years. And actually, you can see it right through his helmet. The eyes and the face tells everything of the personality. And I just don't see it, that NFL hunger and just still hungry to go win another championship. I just think it's cliche and talk that guys get up there and say, oh, I want to win a championship. Oh, it sounds good, but I want to see what you do on the field.
I mean, that's big talk Jermichael Finley obviously has, I would say he has
issues with Aaron.
A bone to pick with Aaron Rodgers, clearly. I don't know that he could say, oh, you could just see Aaron Rodgers didn't care. Aaron Rodgers, this, that, and the other. The other stuff he would probably know about. But that one, I don't know. I think Jermichael's maybe, I think that may be a little bit of a reach right now based on, you know, a guy that he doesn't really care for. I think that's a lot to say that you could see it in a game on television. You could look at his eyes and see he wasn't, I mean, maybe he can say that after three games. I'm going to let it play out. I still would put my money on Aaron Rodgers. If you had the proverbial gun to your head challenge and you said, okay, I've seen into the future, do you think Aaron Rodgers will have a good season or will continue to have a bad season? I don't think there's many people willing to take the gun to the head challenge and say bad season, including JerMichael Finley.
Okay, they play Detroit Monday night. They're giving 11
Detroit
points.
Sucks. If they don't – watching Detroit, if they don't
– onside kick and all that late crap.
Yeah, if they don't whack Detroit, then something's wrong.
Something's wrong.
Yeah. Maybe Randall Cobb is bad luck.
Well, you don't
want thought about that?
Randall Cobb hasn't won many games lately.
Nope.
That's for sure.
Maybe Randall Cobb is a bad luck guy.
You're giving that 11 then?
Well, I think about it, but yeah, I might.
I mean, I might. Listen, they shouldn't have covered. They should not have covered against San Francisco.
No.
That game was out of reach.
I think San Francisco's I think their run defense is a little bit problematic, but no, they shouldn't have covered. San Francisco should have beat them by over 20.
Yeah. Oh, what was it?
It was 41-17. It was 41-17 with at the 2 minute mark.
Yeah, and it ended up 41-33.
Yep.
I mean, that's ridiculous. Ridiculous. 840 ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Aaron Rodgers is going to have to answer JerMichael Finley questions today.
You think he will, or you think he'll pass?
Yeah,
I don't think he can pass. I think he'll have something to say. Where was that show?
See,
by the way?
There was JerMichael Finley, Aaron Rodgers beef before, if I'm not mistaken. JerMichael Finley has had stuff to say about Aaron Rodgers before, if I'm not mistaken. But I think Aaron took the high road with it. This isn't the first time that JerMichael Finley.
Oh, that was on First Take.
The audio I just played was from Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max this morning.
Oh. That is, well, I think there's a reason that they wanted JerMichael Finley's thoughts on it, because JerMichael Finley has been outspoken before, if I'm not mistaken.
No, you're right. You're right. Both Greg Jennings and JerMichael Finley have raised eyebrows in the past by airing their grievances against their former quarterback. This is written in August of 2020.
Yeah.
And both Greg Jennings and JerMichael Finley enjoyed tremendous success in Green Bay. The former entered the NFL as a second-round pick of Western Michigan. Yada, yada. While Finley did not play in the Super Bowl due to an injury, he stormed back with a fantastic 2011 campaign. But, this is Greg Jennings.
Yeah.
Greg Jennings came back. He was on Colin Coward's show and, ranted about Aaron Rodgers. Tyler Dunn, a Bleacher Report in 2019, published a lengthy piece detailing everything that went on with Rodgers, Mike McCarthy, and the rest of the Packers organizations. Jennings recalled an incident in 2012 that forever changed his view of Rodgers. According to the Whiteout, his own quarterback told an opposing player that his team should sign Jennings after the season ended. That soured the relationship. Had the shoe been on the other foot and I said, "Hey, man, I should come and play with your quarterback," he would have just been so offended by that. But when it comes out of his mouth, and we all know that there's truth behind jokes, for him to say that and just act as though everything was the same, it just wasn't. So that's the joke in the NFL is... when you say, "Oh man, I hope he ends up in our division," or "No, I hope the Texans draft Davis Mills," that's considered a slam if somebody in your division says that. And he's not a natural born leader, said JerMichael Finley. This is in 2019. I thought he'd be able to grow out of it, but you give a guy more money, there's more attitude, more diva-ness. So I don't think none of this is surprising me though. None of this is surprising me. All I care about is he going to be a player on the field? If this were my team, if I were a Green Bay Packer fan, I'd care about the personality stuff. Right now, are you going to be able to cover? Are you going to be good for fantasy points? That's what I care about right now. Are you covering?
Aaron Rodgers had the 35th most fantasy points for a quarterback last week. There's only 32 teams.
35.
Yeah, Justin Fields beat him.
Oh, Trey Lance beat him?
Yeah.
Those are the two who beat them.
30
backup quarterbacks who scored touchdowns.
33 and 34. All right.
He was last in the league. That was a last in the league game.
It sure was. 3 points. All right, 844 ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5. Time for you to talk about. That was a little jab.
Bang, bang, bang. Site Jab. SITEJab.com. And Hector over at Site Jab, they've been in the business over 2 decades here in Houston. It's a Houston-based company. Support local, and they're going to support you. They want to take your business, whether it's small or medium size, and they want to help you grow. And to do that, what they do is they want to put their best foot forward, or your best foot forward, with different video production, social media strategies, branding strategies, logo development. There's so many things that they can do for you besides just building out that really kick-ass website for you from the ground floor up, where the design, the front-end design is fantastic. It's got, you know, baked into it the e-commerce on the backside, so they can put e-commerce into your site. And what they want to do is keep the viewer engaged with your product and really put your best foot forward with what your product is, what you do, and even portfolios of the work that you've done. Sitejab.com. Check them out right now. They're very affordable and they're awesome with the work that they do. Sitejab.com.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
Time to talk about my man, Jeff Aronoff. Absolute marble and granite. What do you need done? You need something done. You got to do something. Can't just sit around and let that house or that business just deteriorate. Can't let it listen, you got to update. You got to upgrade. You got to do something big. You got to do something drastic. You want to keep the value of that. You want to increase the value of that. If you let it just, you know, go away, if your countertops, your vanities, your, you know, lack of whatever it is you need, outdoor patios or outdoor kitchens, and this includes businesses as well. At outdoor, it is awesome to have, if you have a restaurant or bar or whatever, to have an outdoor patio where people can sit in the fall. It's nice fall and spring and be out there and enjoying the weather here in the city of Houston, even into the winter. Those things will pay off. And Jeff Aronoff can get that job done for you. He did it for us. He does it every single day, and he will do it for you. Got a big job? Want to get something done? Want a guy who will design it and build it himself and not subcontract it? It's Jeff Aronoff, Absolute Marble and Granite. 713-880-2822. It's Absolute Marble and Granite.
Patrolling the Houston sports radio scene for 20 years. Well, minus a few years where Lance took a little detour. This is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, 849. Pro Football Focus put out the highest average box counts faced on early downs this week. Who loaded up the box? Against
Texans.
Well, Jacksonville loaded up the box against the Texans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think Texans probably did.
Actually, the Texans were the bunks the lowest.
Oh, well, now you have to go to the formations that were run. So I would say Arizona probably.
So wait a minute. So Houston faced the highest box counts this week.
But sometimes it's because based on your personnel.
They did a lot of two tight, three tight, 13.
Which is automatically going to load the box.
You're going to load the box up.
So in that case.
Because your safeties can run with those tight ends.
So your point is to show that Houston faced a lot of load of boxes, which is going to make for harder running.
Well, and the Texans didn't run the ball well.
Or if you're good at blocking it up, it can create explosive run plays.
Yes, huge run plays. Yeah. If you've got a guy that can pop that hole.
We're going, you got to create a little bit of a crease.
Yeah, and have an explosive back, which is Mark Ingram, David Johnson.
I don't think the Texans can load up.
I think that's what Philip Lindsay is for.
But this is where, but you can't just line up in 12 personnel, one running back, two tight ends, and think you're just going to say, okay, our best versus your best, let's see who can impose their will. They're not that kind of running team.
Yeah.
They don't have that. They don't have that offensive line up front. So if they do that, that's what bothers me about Cleveland is I don't think they can get those yards against Cleveland running the football. And then if they try to spread it out, I really worry about the tackles, especially the right tackle position versus, believe it or not, versus Clowney and versus the rush of Cleveland. So we'll see how they do. I don't think Cleveland might load up. I mean, you may see teams say, hey, you know what? We're staying base. We don't care if you go three wide receiver sets. We're going to run some base defense against you because if you try to run too much out of your three wide receiver sets, we're going to be able to stop you. At some point, the Texans have to be able to run this season or they're in a lot of trouble. I don't care what happened against Jacksonville. If the Texans can't run the ball, if people don't respect them and they can stop them with six, if they can stop them with six, then there's a big problem.
Is it part of this that they don't respect Tyrod? They didn't respect Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, some of it.
Yeah.
And they'll keep playing chess. It'll keep being a chess match. Like, prove it.
Well, right.
Prove it, Tyrod.
So we're going to stop you from running the ball, and we don't believe Tyrod Taylor can beat us with his arm. And especially if you're going two tights or three tights, which is what the Texans did quite often. The teams that saw the fewest loaded boxes were Buffalo, Chicago, Green Bay, Jacksonville, and Washington. And
Washington?
What was the common denominator out of all of them?
Say that again?
Buffalo, Chicago, Green Bay, Jacksonville, and Washington.
Buffalo, Chicago, Green Bay,
Washington. They all trailed.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, that makes sense, too. Yeah. These aren't so much strategic as in that one. Yeah, you're not going to. You're going to be in coverage.
Chicago was behind big. Green Bay was behind big. Jacksonville was
They ran
behind
okay,
big.
Though. Chicago ran the ball pretty well with Montgomery.
No, Montgomery had yards. Yeah. No question. But... Okay, I'll give you those yards, and guess what? We're going to kick your ass because we're way ahead. So I'll give you those yards, but that is a guaranteed win. Keep running the ball. We're going to play off. You keep running the ball. You keep using the clock and not score. We'll just make sure that you don't score. We'll bend but don't break, and we're going to win.
Yeah,
and that's what the Rams did. And Buffalo, is Devin Singletary good enough? There's a question.
I don't know that he is. I mean, it was supposed to be Devin Singletary and Zach Moss. Are they going to be good enough? I would be worried about their running game.
I would be worried about their running game. They said Josh Allen beat us. You know what? Josh Allen ain't going to beat us. We're going to play back. You can run the ball on us. And actually, they stopped the run with fewer fronts, with fewer men in the box.
When you're able to do that, once again, if you're able to do that, it opens up everything from a pass coverage standpoint. If you can rush with four, if you can stop the run with six and sit in a nickel concept, I was just looking at a stat right here that has the Texans. You know, and this is another thing to keep your eye on. The Texans were second in the league last week at six-man rush. And then, you know, at five-man rush, 60% at five-man rush. That's actually five-man rush wasn't that high. But six-man rush, Lovey was bringing six. He was bringing six against a rookie. Yeah, that tells you something. Now, this week against Baker Mayfield, my guess is
no,
that's going to be a lot different.
Yeah.
He won't rush the same.
I can't imagine.
But he blitzed. Lovey blitzed. Well, okay, 40%. Lovey only blitzed five times, so I take it back. The Texans blitzed the least. So it's 40% when they did rush, and when they did blitz, it was basically two of the five times he brought six.
He's not known for blitzing. Lovey is not.
Three times. No. He only blitzed five times.
I mean, he stayed back in coverage, and if you can put pressure on your quarterback, it's how the Giants beat Tom Brady.
Yeah, but they may need to run blitz.
In the greatest offense in history, the Giants rushed four and kept seven back and beat Tom Brady. If you can beat Tom Brady, I'm pretty sure that you can beat a rookie in his first ever start.
Right.
By keeping seven back and getting pressure on him with four. They did a great job. I didn't know this. This is interesting. Patrick Creighton just tweeted this out a little while ago. Most fumbles in first 28 NFL games since 1994. Tony Banks had 34. Daniel Jones has 30 fumbles. And he had a huge fumble the other day.
I don't remember him being a tiny hand guy either.
I don't know about tiny hand guy, but he can't hold on to the football. He had a huge fumble on Sunday that helped cost them the game.
Let me see what his combine. I'm just curious.
9 3/4 inches.
Yeah, that's a big hand. That's a pretty big hand for a quarterback. So that's not a problem.
Well, Steve McNair was third with 27 fumbles. Since 94 in his first 28 NFL games.
Has Lamar Jackson
30 fumbles in 20 NFL games. That's a lot.
That's terrible. It's one thing, if you're giving the ball away as a quarterback, they will look to replace you. You can't give the ball away. Does Lamar Jackson fumble a lot, or is
he
that
fumbled
just,
twice the other night?
I know he did. Yeah, I don't know if that's a common issue for him, because for Daniel Jones, if you're going to fumble like that, you better throw zero interceptions. Your season better look like this: 26 touchdowns, one interception, 14 fumbles.
8:57 ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5.
Fumbles.
And
oh, yeah. Well, Lamar's got 25 in 4 years.
That's not
10,
horrific.
8,
as
5,
much as he
and 2.
Has the ball.
Yeah, it's probably
and
not
a lot
that
of
much.
That is probably getting his arm hit while he's.
Yeah.
Well, he's all he's throwing.
Yep.
Well, you and I need to talk about Aqueduct Plumbing. AqueductPlumbingCompany.com, AqueductPlumbingCompany.com. We're big fans of Billy and Mary and Michelle and everybody over there. They're really, really good. It's an old joke about plumbers. You know what? They can just charge whatever they want. They'll get there when they want.
It's not a funny joke at all.
It's not a funny
joke. That's one of the worst jokes I've ever heard.
No. It's like used car salesmen or what. That's the stigma on them. And Billy's like, that's not us. We're going to go and we're going to give you a free consultation. We're going to give you a great price. We are the home of one-day repiping. We're going to do a great job for you. We're not going to subcontract it out. We're going to do the work, and we'll be responsible for the work. And you know what? You can trust us. And I just feel really good about these people. If you need a plumber, give them a call.
Trustworthiness is everything for this, especially plumbing. But they can repipe. They can trench under and get all the piping done for you. They can do tankless water heaters. And if you just have leaky faucets, I mean, that's what you need a lot of the time. They're the ones that come out and do that for you. So make sure that you go to my friends and John's friends over at AqueductPlumbingCompany.com, A-Q-U-E, DuckPlumbingCompany.com.
6230.
What's the tagline again?
281-488-6238. They're at your disposal.
Dad.
ESPN 97.5.